Another day, another podcast. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. It's interesting today. I think we're going to talk about flywheels.
That would be a good one to start with.
Yeah, I think it'd be nice to just to see how they can affect the driveline and the how it can add to the dyno capability.
Yeah, it's not as simple as a device that you may think when you dig into it.
Yeah, I guess you think of a flywheel in a car engine as something which just helps keep the speed constant or keep the speed steady, but a lot broader than that in a dyno application.
When you're talking about putting it in a test cell, you're talking about taking the simulation perspective of what the vehicle, whether it be an aircraft or an automobile, and you're taking that total of system inertia and trying to duplicate that in the test cell.
So recreate a whole driveline rather than just the capability of the engine sort of by itself.
Right.
Look at how it fits into the system and then simulate that load through the effect of the inertia of the flywheel.
Yeah, exactly. When you get into talking about the application of it, right? So what industries does this affect?
I guess, again, that can cover a wide range. I mean, from the simpler end would be the car and light truck engine flywheels, looking at how they absorb the variations of speed, perhaps. The bigger application, perhaps the more challenging, is looking into simulating the inertia of an aircraft driveline.
Yeah, so, I think you brought up a good example when we were prepping or preparing for this podcast. You talked about helicopters, and I thought that was interesting from the inertia perspective.
Sure. If you look at the engine is driving this huge rotor for the lift of the helicopter. As we look at simulating that on the dyno, we've got to create something which represents a lot of work for the engine to rotate. And so by putting a large mass there to rotate, we effectively simulate that large rotor.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I think the other part of it is, you know, the standard question that may come to mind maybe is, can you simulate the inertia with a dyno? Do you have to have a flywheel?
And yeah, I guess that's possible with the AC dyno mm-hmm. to some extent, then we can change the way the dyno loads, change the way it's programmed to increase the load with speed, and how that varies the load can simulate different inertia levels.
Yep.
But similarly, a big water break represents some significant inertia in itself. If we go to the larger dynos, they have a large rotor in there, and that is the same as a flywheel. So that can only represent one inertia, though, and it can't be varied unless we add more weight into the driveline somewhere.
Well, I think you bring up a very good point, Chris. So when you look at, can a dyno do it? And you mentioned the AC dynamometer. So it has the ability to motor absorb. So it has the dynamic characteristics required to simulate this. And when you look at limitations, it can't do all the applications. It's limited by its size itself and what it can do based upon power. So it's not the end-all, be-all in regards to an inertia simulation, but it is a good tool if it's available to you. If you have an AC dynamometer, dependent upon the size range, you have that ability to possibly eliminate utilizing flywheels in a test cell.
But doesn't that also then come down to the programming of the dyno load and how those algorithms are developed so that it reflects the inertia you want? It revolves around some clever programming rather than necessarily the physical attribute of the driveline.
Absolutely. So when you buy an AC dynamometer, you're not going to typically use it for just doing steady state testing. You're buying it because you need the ability to motor or perform dynamic style testing or types of testing. So yes, you're absolutely correct. It will require algorithms that are capable of doing this inertia simulation. And in fact, some packages come with inertia simulation that you don't have to create it from ground level.
But that requires typically some customizing to a particular application. I mean, if we're looking at an aircraft engine driving a particular prop, the idea that that could be some sort of standard inertia is maybe stretching things a little. I can see there is some customization required to meet a particular challenge, a particular application.
Right. And what you get with some of these packages, you get a base to start with, a baseline to start with, so you don't have to build it from the ground up. You've got the tools to do the inertia simulation utilizing an AC dynamometer.
And do you think the test cell operators can reprogram that, or is that getting to be going back to the dyno manufacturer to then tune that to a particular need?
No, I think experienced users, mainly from an application engineering perspective within the company that do commissioning style work or development work, are capable of doing that once they have the tool set.
Okay.
So that's pretty neat. I know we veered off course and talked a lot about AC dynamometers, but our whole purpose is to tell you different ways of doing it. And that's one way of doing it if you have an AC dynamometer. But if you don't, that leads us down the path of utilizing a flywheel. So back to the flywheel discussion, Chris, it's basically saying, okay, I've determined that I need to simulate an inertia. So how do I determine what flywheel to get, right?
Yeah, in that case, you've got to look back at what you're trying to replicate with the test. So if it is, let's talk about a light truck.
Mm-hmm.
If we're trying to run a light truck or trying to simulate the load of a vehicle on a particular application, then we're going to have to, we can take the flywheel that was originally designed with that engine or typical for a particular engine size, but then we may need to increase that to reflect the weight of a vehicle so that we, when we have an acceleration event, it actually reflects actually moving the vehicle and accelerating the vehicle rather than just accelerating the engine itself.
Right, right. And that's the concept behind understanding it so you can properly size it. It's not always easy to do, and it's typically if you've been working in test cells, you're not always going to have that information at your fingertips. That's where it's going to come from: the customer, the end user, the manufacturer that says, I need to make sure when we're testing this engine that we have this amount of total inertia considered in the testing.
Yeah, once we know that system level, we can then work back taking all the rotating elements in the driveline, looking at the inertia of each component,
mm-hmm.
and from that subtracting out what we have in the driveline, and then what's left has to be created through the flywheel.
In a crude
calculation.
Right. And hopefully you don't have to remove inertia, that you're just adding inertia, because it becomes a little bit more complicated if your inertia is already too high without a flywheel.
Right. And in that case, it would have to, with a water brake, we'd have to probably look at a different water brake to take the size of the rotor down, because mm-hmm. that changes mm-hmm. the whole power absorption. So that would be a little challenging to reduce the inertia, and that's not typically what we're doing as we're putting, if you're trying to simulate a vehicle, we're more usually adding inertia rather than taking away.
Right. And then the other part of this equation is determining what's the max speed this needs to spin at. And one of the key attributes to consider is, dependent upon the size of inertia, this can become quite a challenge. You know, the more mass you have to spin, the more difficult it is to spin faster. And it's all relative, I guess, is the best way to say it. But, you know, our experiences in our current roles at our company, we spin quite fast, and we work with some significant inertias where it's a challenge, because you could be spinning a large mass at over 20, 25,000 RPM.
Yeah, I can see the challenge of that, both the physical task of restraining the flywheel, but also the integrity of the flywheel itself to spin at that speed without any issues. And perhaps it's useful just to look at the anatomy of a flywheel before we go into some more detail there. When we think of an engine, the flywheel is typically bolted to the back of the engine as a part of the crankshaft.
Right.
In the case of a dyno, we can only put so much weight hanging off the dyno itself, because it will strain those bearings. So a lot of applications here, we're looking at the flywheel being a standalone unit, as a piece of equipment standing behind the dyno, driven by the shaft, or in fact in front of the dyno. It's driven by the drive line, but it has its own bearings and its own support system.
Correct. There are applications that have a larger flywheel mass bolted right to the coupling or hub on a dynamometer, but that introduces other things or other engineering considerations about overhung mass on the dyno itself that could be a concern. And we've seen applications where people have just made the decision to put a mass, rotating mass, and bolt it right to the dynamometer without proper support, and just relying on the bearings in the dynamometer to support that additional load. And it didn't work out well because it wasn't engineered correctly.
Right. I mean, those bearings are designed for the weight of the dyno rotating assembly. To add a considerable weight of a flywheel directly to those bearings is something that needs special discussion with the dyno manufacturer to make sure that can be accommodated by the dyno bearings.
Yeah, so that's one of the things to be considered if you start looking at different styles of flywheel and flywheel mounting, and what to be aware of when you're entering into a conversation of utilizing it on a dynamometer without potentially proper support. So that needs to be considered. So, and then you have the bearings itself as part of the anatomy, right? The trunnions in which they're mounted, or the support structures in which the flywheel is mounted. One of the other things too that we should touch base on is braking and braking capability. You think that's a worthy discussion?
It is, I think, more so for the aircraft engine of the dynos than the automotive side. But yes, sometimes the flywheel will have a brake. Now, that seems a contradiction. We already have the dyno, which can slow down the engine. But there are some situations where we might look to bring the driveline to a total halt. If we're simulating certain aircraft maneuvers, we'll actually, like a landed helicopter, we'd look at actually locking the dyno shaft stationary and look at the engine effect of that as we go from a running operation to a stationary operation. In other cases, we may need to brake the dyno, I guess, to a lower speed than the dyno itself can bring the engine down to.
Right.
So we'll look at adding some additional resistance there.
Right. There's the safety aspect of it as well, right? So with this mass spinning, you know, you may make this decision that I want a set of brakes on the flywheel, because if something were to happen where you needed to stop things quickly, and if there was a shaft that connected the flywheel to the dyno, and God forbid that the shaft would break, you have this flywheel spinning at a high rate of speed, and you don't want it to keep whipping around with half a drive shaft connected to it. So you want to break that down, no pun intended, as soon as possible. So another reason you could use that is a safety means as well, to help with the braking action if need be. And you could also lock it at the beginning. And I think you alluded to that when you were talking about it, is at a dead stop, you may want to just have things locked as a brake.
Yeah, so it can handle that. This isn't something we'd use as a supplemental dyno. This would be braking for a specific end result rather than the operation of the engine as a whole.
Right. And we go through this every day, every other day, in regards to the logic behind the braking system. So you still have, it's a caliper and a rotor and a brake assembly that we program differently for different applications to serve different purposes. So it's going to be either we may be slowing it down gradually, braking gradually, we may be able holding it at a standstill. It's all what the customer needs are, or the requirements of the test are, to be fulfilled.
Right. And if I look to another aspect of the design of the flywheel, I guess it's its location. I mean, typically we can mount the flywheel before the dyno. So in other words, being driven by the engine drive shaft and then going through the flywheel to the dyno. Or it can be mounted behind the dyno, and where we drive through the dyno shaft and then onto the flywheel. In terms of inertia, there's no difference in effect. But in terms of the shaft design and the couplings, it changes things a little, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that's a very important point, because you got to make sure that if you're putting it in line with the engine and the dyno, that means it has to be able to handle the torque transmission of the engine. So right. You need to make sure that you understand what the torque capability needs to be, or the maximum torque is going to be for the testing application that you have. So it's not just speed, it's not just inertia, it's also understanding torque or torque transmission through the flywheel. Because the dyno may be able to absorb more than the flywheel, and that would be a bad situation in regards to if you're exceeding the capability of the torque capability and the material used in the flywheel.
Yeah, if you imagine, I suppose, the engine's trying to twist the front of the flywheel and the dyno is resisting it at the back of the flywheel, it puts a lot of stress into that mechanism.
Right, and that gets into talking with the manufacturer of flywheels like ourselves or dynos, and understanding, you know, we understand what's necessary. We built in, you know, in our design aspect, we looked at margins of safety and we designed that into our equipment. So we know that if the customer operates it as advertised, as spec'd out with our curves and our performance curves, then it will be safe to operate.
Right.
We make sure that we design in that margin of error in there, so we protect ourselves, we protect the customer.
Yeah. Okay, so we talked about the speed of the dyno. What's the risk here if somebody starts to speed a dyno faster than its design intent?
So there's terms used like critical speed. Any rotating device should have a critical speed. That's in which they're issues that come about where you could have vibration-related issues if you exceed a certain speed. That's determined in the design aspect of it, the inputs you put into it as far as what's being tested, how fast it's spinning, what loads it's seeing, and understanding the operating range that it's being designed for. So, you know, the main thing is in any spinning equipment is you want to make sure that you adhere to whatever the specification is not to exceed the max speeds.
Right. And those speeds, if they start exceeding the capability of the bearings, then you're going to get into some instability and some pretty dangerous end results could occur.
Yeah, especially dependent upon the speed, right? So it only takes, as they say, a split second or less than a split second to cause some serious damage if it's not operated correctly.
All right. So it's important there to maintain the performance within the specification of the flywheel and the specification of the dyno, so don't risk operating in unstable conditions.
Yeah, and the other thing is, just like our dynos, the flywheel should have the safety means to monitor and protect and recognize issues before they become catastrophic, whether it be vibration, pressure to the oil feed system for the lubrication. You know, all those things should be monitored and measured as part of the overall safety of the testing environment.
It's interesting because initially think of a flywheel as a relatively simple sort of fixed circular device that's attached to an engine. But in fact, as we look at it in these applications, these testing applications, it becomes really quite a complex part of the system as a whole.
It does. And like the dynamometer, as simple as it may sound, it is a precise piece of equipment.
Yeah. So as we talk about the anatomy of the driveline and the flywheels, we talked about recognizing how the inertia of the flywheel adds to the total inertia, and we can come up with a system figure. Are there some situations where that might need to be significantly increased and we might need additional flywheels?
Yeah, in the past, I've worked with having a series of flywheels that are stacked together to give you a little bit more versatility in the total inertia and being able to adjust it. But most have refrained from doing that, and there's couple reasons why. One, it's going to be the cost. The second thing is you need to be concerned about the amount of rotating components in the driveline, and you want to minimize the number of components, because the more you add, the more you have to consider all the alignment of these devices, and it's that much more at risk of having issues related to all the masses rotating.
So you look at the dynamics, so the stability of the whole driveline with that. And each element that's added, I suppose, adds the risk of small tolerances becoming effectively more significant as they add up.
I'm not saying it can't be done, but personally, I shy away from that because of the complexity of the negative effects of trying to use multiple flywheels versus trying to size the correct one size flywheel that fits to your application.
Yeah, I can see the risk of putting extra pieces together. I'm interested, how would they actually be linked together, though?
They can be clutched together. So I've seen them clutched in between flywheels to engage them. Some of them are just bolt in. You just bolt them hard, bolt them in together on a single frame that's able to house five or six flywheels, and you just add flywheels to that frame as needed to accommodate the inertia spec.
That brings back the whole subject of how to align those rotating masses together and how to look at your driveline as a whole, from the engine back through the dyno, through the flywheel. It starts to become a complex alignment challenge and something we should perhaps talk about at another time. But that alignment, without that, we're going to risk really some serious vibration being added into the driveline.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Chris.
So thanks for the discussion today, Mike. I think it's been an interesting topic, and we've covered a fair bit of ground.
We did, Chris. We did.
Good conversation.
Thank you for listening to Dyno Insights, presented by Food. If there are any engine testing topics you'd like us to discuss, we'd love to hear from you. Please email us at podcast@fooddyno.com.